Chapter 3. Mysteries. A starship was a place of mysteries. The most obvious mystery is the space in which they explored. However, little enigmas and conundrums were lurking in every corridor, whispering along the narrow conduits running behind the walls. For instance, why did Jeffrey's Tube 3 always take longer than all the other turbo lift tubes to get its occupants to their destinations? Or why did an EPS relay on Deck 13 resonate with a low hum resembling a Klingon folk song? And, of course, the possibility of two people serving on a starship together for months had never laid eyes upon each other. This was such a mystery for Nathan Jackson. In passing, he heard about Chief Rain, perused her files, and even assigned junior staff members to run her physicals. Yet the opportunity to meet her face to face had not materialized. This was hardly unusual. In a ship full of people where he was the chief medical officer, ensuring the perfect health of everyone on the Maverick while conducting research into the Borg assimilation process, his time was valuable. Other than socializing with the senior staff during their weekly dinners and some sessions on the holodeck, Nathan was more or less buried in his work. There was no reason to push himself so hard, but this was his nature. Shattering the Borg assimilation process was the best protection against the collective. Determining how to achieve this was Herculean. Nathan knew the discovery could save countless lives, and it provided him with motivation and justification to push himself so hard. However, when Nathan met the transporter chief, whose full name was Rain Nahl, Nahl being the title of the symbiote inside her, he realized he was spending entirely too much time in his sickbay.
"So, what can I do for you?"
he asked politely, trying not to notice the amazing length of the hair that fell around her shoulders. She did not wear it up, and Nathan decided it would have been a crime against men everywhere if she did. He reminded himself he was a doctor and should not be thinking like this when it was necessary to remain professional.
"I am not entirely sure, Dr. Jackson."
She followed him to the examination table. This was the first time Rain encountered the CMO since every time he was required to make a journey off the ship, it was always someone else at the transporter controls. It surprised her how young he looked, and Rain thought he had kind eyes that compelled trust when you looked into them.
"I was on my way to my quarters, and I had this attack. A sharp stabbing pain in my head. I've never felt anything like it before."
A frown crossed her sweet face, and Nathan involuntarily thought it had no business being there.
"Well, let's take a look, shall we?"
He shunted aside his personal interest the instant he picked up the medical tricorder and began his work. He took his patient's health too seriously to be anything but single-minded when working. There was an awkward pause for a few seconds as he made his examination, allowing Rain to observe him. She noticed he was somewhat self-conscious about her scrutiny. His coloring made it challenging to see his embarrassment, but Rain had enough experience to sense it and found it rather endearing. Suddenly, she had a picture of him confined in a laboratory most of the time, working in solitude, and she decided it was a state of affairs that would not at all do.
"Do I make you nervous, doctor?"
"Why do you ask that?"
Nathan responded, amazed by his ability to not come unglued by the question because he was nervous around her.
"I just get that impression."
"I don't get out much. Not used to being sociable."
"I think you're a pretty multifaceted guy. You'll handle it."
Rain winked at him. Nathan burst into a grin, and Rain decided she liked his smile just as much as the rest of him and gave him some peace to continue his scans. There was no doubt in Rain's mind he was utterly confident when inside this room but could be a little on the shy side when forced to venture out of its protection. For Chief Medical Officer, he was young, and Rain was sure he was very good at what he did. Rain promised herself to see Nathan Jackson again. And it would not be for a professional consultation either.
"So, am I okay?"
she asked when he stepped away and studied his tricorder, not liking the pause that stretched into seconds as he deliberated the readings on the small device.
"It looks like you've had some kind of neural surge."
Nathan frowned, not understanding how such a thing was possible. However, with so many alien physiologies in existence, it was not entirely impossible either.
"How is that possible?"
"I don't know."
Nathan shook his head, clearly disturbed.
"I may have to consult my medical database and see if this is perhaps a condition specific to your Trill physiology."
"I can tell you it's not. Misa Nahl, three hosts back, was a doctor, and she doesn't feel it. Besides, when it happened, we all felt it. Not just me but the other past hosts, and it was sudden. I was just talking to Commander Stiles, and it just hit me out of nowhere.
Commander Stiles was with you at the time?
Nathan asked automatically, although his mind was more focused on the cause of the attack.
Yes, she was.
Rain recalled the incident and, upon examining the encounter, wondered if there was not something a little odd about the entire situation.
It was funny. We were talking, and I mentioned I thought people were behaving a little strangely.
Behaving strangely?
Nathan looked at her sharply. He had been working in his lab for most of today. Other than Josiah, Nathan had not been outside or seen anyone other than his own staff to be aware of any abnormalities in the crew's behavior.
The women mostly.
Rain continued to explain, still unsure if what she had seen was not her perceptions clouded by a bad day instead of something genuine.
It was like...
She hesitated, unable to explain a feeling, even one as strong as this.
They were there, but not there.
Nathan did not wish to say this to her, but he believed in being honest with his patients.
Well, you suffered something of an episode. Perhaps your view of things was only the initial symptom of the more physical attack.
You mean I was thinking that way because what's wrong with me was manifesting into the hell I went through in the turbo lift?
Rain eyed him thoughtfully, not at all offended by his explanation. The doctor that existed inside her would not discount the possibility, even if Rain didn't entirely believe it.
What do you think?
I think that although my gut instincts tell me that something odd is going on around here,
Rain huffed unhappily,
I have to at least consider the possibility this might be the case.
Good.
Nathan offered her a smile.
Now that aside, I would like to conduct some deeper scans and see if we can work out what happened to you in the turbo lift.
Still, the gnawing feeling lingered in the back of Rain's mind. She collapsed inside the lift without Commander Stiles lifting a finger to help her. Even as the second officer of the Maverick, Alex was a friend. While they did not socialize frequently, it didn't excuse Alex for just leaving her there.
Only on one condition.
Rain was not about to admit she was entirely wrong about her assertions just yet.
When we're done, you come out of here with me and look for yourself.
I thought you said you were open to the possibility.
He smiled, glad he thought her too strong-willed to let it go so quickly.
I am.
She stated with a hint of defiance.
Just as long as you are open to the possibility people are acting strangely.
Okay.
He could concede that much if it meant she would allow him to run his tests because he wanted to know if there was something seriously wrong with her. Neural surges of the type she experienced were not common and, if allowed to continue without treatment, damaging over long periods.
You got a deal.
And perhaps after that investigation, we decide we might stop at Four Corners for some dinner. It might even be more worth the effort.
She flashed him an inviting smile he could not refuse.
You always this forward.
You always this shy?
Rain returned just as quickly.
Touché.
He cried defeat and decided even if nothing was going on beyond the walls of his sickbay, he would not mind having dinner with her.
We have a problem.
Alexandra Stiles, or the entity possessing her body, announced upon entering the inner sanctum of Julia Pemberton's workroom on the engineering deck. The room was small and contained a workbench and a terminal, giving the master of the deck full access to all systems on the ship. Whenever Julia was not out of the main floor, they could find her here whenever she needed a little peace. When Alex arrived, Julia and Mary were already waiting for her. It was late in the day, and all three women had skillfully navigated the Maverick, avoiding all the other command officers, as they converged to decide their next course of action. The dispersal of all the many across the Maverick was complete, and the new hosts awaited instructions. Once the door closed behind Alex, sealing them inside the room and away from the prying ears of those who could threaten their plans, the conversation resumed after Alex's startling announcement. She joined her sisters in the center of the room, positioned like stones circling a place of council in times past.
What sort of problem?
The Julia entity demanded an explanation. Her emerald-colored eyes narrowed in calculation and suspicion. Among their number, she was guardian and protector, the one who saw danger everywhere and kept them one step ahead of the enemy. She was the thinker.
I attempted to pass one of the many to the Chosen, but the transference was halted. I had not encountered this before. We can pass the many to several species, far more different from the one with whom I attempted to bond with. It is unprecedented.
The incident concerned the Alex entity. Information was what she craved. It was the reason she had selected the host she had. In the past, She had always gone first to seek information and gather intelligence to determine whether it was safe for others. Half a million years after the fact, it was still the same. She did not like that she had no answers, even for something unprecedented.
It is. Explained why this might be so.
Once again, she did not expect to be kept waiting. The gatherer considered the information stored in the host's memories mind and searched for an answer.
I am uncertain of why this might be so, but the species of the subject is Trill. As a race, they are curiosity, divided into two distinct branches, host and symbiote. The symbiote is a larval life form living within a host. Their physiology is composed entirely of neural matter. This allows them to retain the memories of all hosts they previously inhabited. Therefore, while the host might die, the essence of what they are remains alive in the symbiote, apparently long-lived. The rejection may be because of the several personalities already inhabiting the subject. We should take steps to neutralize her. She may notice what is happening to the others of her kind and may bring undue attention to us before we are ready for it.
The Julia entity nodded slowly in agreement with her recommendation.
We must attend to this matter before all else. However, we can delegate that task to our sisters on the ship.
Yes.
The Mary entity, the infiltrator of the group, declared. It was always her task to watch the enemy and learn its ways for exploitation. Her host was also equally suitable since its mind possessed much knowledge of the customs and traditions of the races they now walked amongst.
We are the three most senior female officers on board this vessel, and we have not reported to our superiors in some time. You,
Mary glanced at Alex,
are meant to be studying our prison. The captain will expect a report from you and wonder where we are. At some point, we must face them.
She is correct.
Julia agreed begrudgingly, deciding the time had come to deal with that situation. They had avoided it long enough, and such evasion would soon no longer be possible.
We must make things ready for the trip home, and so we must take measures to deal with the command staff of this vessel. From the memories I hold, I am in a perfect position to deal with the one who maintains security. He has feelings towards the host.
Feelings. The word left a bitter taste in the thinker's mouth. After so many years of confinement, belief in such emotions existing between two such different creatures was not something she could readily accept.
I have forgotten what it was like to have emotions.
The Alex entity mused in something akin to regret and similar dislike. She could feel the warmth the host felt for one of the hated and, though she understood what it was like, could not condone it. It was a folly that had destroyed too many of them. It was a fate she would spare the mind sharing this body with her.
Do not dwell on them too much. It's what the enemy uses to make you bleed inside. It held us in chains for too long and allowed them to imprison us for an eon.
I know.
Alex brushed away the conflict inside her because there was no time for such reflection.
My vassal has her closest links to the officer of the Khan. Unfortunately, the usual methods will not apply to him.
Why is that?
The infiltrator inquired with curiosity.
It appears he is of a species that matures differently from the others on board. They are called Vulcan and are also long-lived, though not the same extent as the Trill. He is as measured by the inhabitants of his world in the pre-adolescent stage of development. Although he has deep feelings for this host, we cannot distract him by using the usual methods of coercion. He does not have the sexual maturity to understand it, and our attempt to use it will only provoke his suspicion. However,
she turned to Mary.
I think it should be you that approaches him.
Why me? I believe my relationship with the captain would make me more valuable in that regard. He has deep feelings for my host, which makes him highly susceptible to manipulation.
That may be so, but you are required for the Vulcan. Your vassal possesses minor psi ability, barely passable by any standards, but enough to affect him if necessary. He has a minimal understanding of his own ability, even though, by nature, the species is highly telepathic. Your vassal has been teaching him how to build shields, but even that is rudimentary. You should be able to interfere with him easily.
And that will leave you free to deal with the first officer.
Julia nodded in understanding of Alex's reasoning.
He desires the vassal I inhabit.
Alex responded with more than apparent dislike on her face at the possibility of having to indulge the hated one with her favors.
In fact, judging by the vassal's memories of him, he would desire any woman he lays his eyes upon, which will make it exceedingly easy to neutralize him. Once we have the bridge crew, we should be able to take control of the ship easily.
What about the captain?
Mary asked again.
He has the authorization codes to lock us out of the ship. If we do not deal with him first, the situation may escalate.
Do not trouble yourself,
Julia said with a bit of a smile.
The captain is being dealt with.
Chapter 4. Ardor. Chris Larrabee hated paperwork. He hated it with a passion. The only drawback to being the captain of a starship was the bureaucracy and paperwork that came with the job. It seemed to expand exponentially. He remembered the carefree days when a report was all the paperwork he was required to do because his responsibility ended the moment he submitted it to his immediate superior. Now that he occupied the top of the food chain, all those reports now came to him. Worse than that, he had to crystallize all the reports, sub-reports, addenda, and memoranda submitted by all department heads into a concise log entry. Chris would rather face the Borg. Although the paper was technically digital data on a console screen, it did not make the tedium any less, and he wondered where Casey was since it was her job to keep him from going insane while doing this. Chris knew he was overreacting. His paperwork was only this prolific because of the recent Dominion engagement and the influx of shore leave requests now they were approaching Pacifica. Deciding this was a task best accomplished with coffee and lots of it, Chris went to the replicator in his ready room and programmed himself a cup of hot Jamaican blend. Once again, Chris gave Casey a silent note of thanks for programming it in for him. She was competent for a yeoman and a girl of her age, even though sometimes she showed her youth. Casey didn't wish the life of a career Starfleet officer, but she still wanted to be a part of space exploration. However, since their recent stopover in Deep Space Nine, he noticed she had been somewhat introspective. It was the first time Casey returned to Bajor since she was an infant. Although she showed none of her feelings upon returning to the ship, Chris was sure the trip touched her emotionally. After all, this was the home she and her parents fled during the occupation. They did not survive the journey out of Bajoran space, allowing the Starfleet captain who rescued Casey to adopt her. The captain was now known to most as Admiral Nettie Wells. Chris returned to his desk once he had the steaming cup of aromatic coffee in his hand and nestled into his chair again, resolving to put a sizable dent in the workload facing him. It sat in front of him as a taunting pile of data pads with its columns upon columns of statistical information. He was just about to reach for the first pad when he heard the gentle trill of someone at his door. "Come in," Chris grumbled. If he had to do a job he loathed, fate could at least let him get on with it uninterrupted. The door slid open, and Casey walked into the room. Inwardly, Chris let out a sigh of relief, knowing she could probably sort through this mess in a hot second, and he was not above admitting he needed help. "Just in time. I could use your help to work through this."
"No problem, Captain."
She smiled, and Chris noticed instead of wearing her hair up like she often did, her long, sheeny brown hair was hanging loosely over her shoulders. She came alongside his desk and looked over his shoulder as he went shuffling through the pile of data pads in front of him, trying to decide where they could start first.
"I've got all these forms to fill and a dozen reports to get together."
"Don't worry, Captain."
Casey leaned over his shoulder until he could feel her breath in his ear, soft and uncertain, everything a young woman was.
"We'll get through it."
Chris shook the thought out of his head, convinced he was mistaken at her tone of voice. What it sounded like could not possibly be, and he told himself to stop making excuses to avoid getting this work done. Brushing away that pleasant sensation against his skin out of his head, he turned back to the pads once again.
"Okay. First up, we have at least a dozen requests for personnel from Stellar Cartography, Sick Bay, and Engineering. I have the replacements in mind, but I need help to fill out these forms, or they're never going to get here."
"Captain."
Casey put her hand over his as he was about to pick up a data pad, her soft palm enclosing his.
"Let's forget about this today."
"Excuse me?" Chris stared at her.
"Captain, I can't help it,"
she said breathlessly, dropping into his lap. Her arms encircled his neck, And Chris did nothing to stop it because he was still too stupefied by shock at what was happening to him at this moment.
I want you.
That did it. Like a splash of cold water against his face, Chris stood up abruptly, almost toppling her off him, and took a good long step backward once he was on his feet. Yeoman, Chris stuttered in something that could have been language or gibberish. He wasn't sure which.
I think we need to talk.
We don't need to talk, Chris.
She breathed, closing the space between them once more, wrapping her arms around his neck to crush his lips against hers in a passionate kiss. For a moment, Chris was so stunned she actually crossed that line between them, breaching 1,000 protocols, not to mention he was old enough to be her father. He stood there, dumbfounded. His senses returned to him when her tongue demanded entrance into his mouth, and Chris broke free of her arms and stepped out of reach.
Yeoman,
he said in his most authoritative voice to remind Casey he was her commanding officer. Chris still had trouble believing what just happened. How could he be so dense, not even to possess the slightest clue Casey had such a heated crush on him? She was JD's girl. Oh Jesus. JD. Chris groaned inwardly. What would the kid say to all this if he found out?
I am very flattered by your affections, but this is not the way I expect you to behave. I am your commanding officer.
He tried to assert himself, searching for the voice customarily reserved for Vorta commanders and Cardassian gulls.
Don't you think I'm pretty, Chris?
She whispered girlishly as her lips curled into a seductive pout. Her eyes looked at him with youthful innocence while biting her lips so erotically it briefly tempted Chris to take her as she wanted until one thought stopped him dead in his tracks. She's a child. What are you thinking? Chris rebuked himself, cursing at his body's lustful reaction, which had little to do with the turmoil in his head. He would not take advantage of a child, and she was a child still. Even though Casey was coming onto him so strongly that it was near impossible to resist, Chris was not about to allow her or himself to make a terrible mistake.
Casey.
Chris placed his hands on her shoulders and made her look at him.
I think you are beautiful, and if you were 10 years older, I wouldn't be able to say no to you as I am doing now. You need someone your age, someone who can share the years with you, not watch you experience it from the sidelines.
I love you, Chris.
She gushed breathlessly, obviously having heard nothing he said in the last few minutes and moved towards him again.
Oh.
Chris rolled his eyes in exasperation, wondering if slamming his head on a brick wall would do more good since this was doing squat.
You don't love me, Casey.
I do, Chris.
She came towards him, and Chris did a quick step to keep her out of reach. He didn't think he was that agile.
Will you stop saying that?
He growled before his back slammed into a wall. The obstruction gave her all the time she needed to close the distance and press her body against his, giving him no time to protest. Casey slid her arms quickly around his neck once again to kiss him despite his resistance.
Casey.
Chris shoved her away as she tried to kiss him. The doors to his ready room chose that moment to open. Ezra Standish entered the room before stopping short in mid-stride at the sight of his captain and his yeoman doing something Ezra was sure was not in her job description. The security chief wore his best poker face as he registered the look of utmost relief on Chris Larrabee's face. Casey, however, seemed perfectly at ease as she pulled away, throwing Chris a coy look.
Am I interrupting something?
No.
Chris barked, wondering if things could get any worse until it occurred to him it could have been Mary who walked into his office. Suddenly Chris became very religious as he thanked God and any other deity who might be listening.
Yeoman,
he turned a sharp eye on Casey, hoping Ezra's presence would cool her ardor for the moment.
You're dismissed.
I'll see you later, Chris.
Casey flashed him a seductive smile of farewell before she sauntered out of the room, oblivious to the chaos she left behind. When the door slid close, Chris finally willed himself to move before he dropped into his chair heavily, exhaling loudly.
Commander, there are no words to describe how grateful I am to you at this moment.
Captain,
Ezra said with a perfectly straight face.
There are no words to describe this moment.
Chris glared at him with one of those patented Larrabee stares, but after what Ezra just witnessed, its power to incinerate him on the spot was not quite up to scratch.
I have no idea what just happened.
Well, if I could comment.
Ezra spoke up before Chris gave him a ferocious glare. This time, it penetrated enough for Ezra to think better of finishing his comment.
The girl just about attacked me. I haven't felt that fearful for my life since the Kakaya captured me.
I assumed Miss Wells was smitten with our Ensign Dunn.
Ezra responded thoughtfully this time, as amusing as the scene had been. The captain was facing a rather explosive situation if left to escalate any further than it already had.
So was I, but then she starts sticking her tongue down my throat and telling me she loves me.
Chris exclaimed with confusion and something Ezra never thought he would ever see in a captain who once bluffed a Romulan warbird into being blown to smithereens. Panic.
Well, young ladies at her age are flighty.
Ezra volunteered, genuinely trying to help before the absurdity of the situation got the better of him and no amount of restraint could keep it in check.
Perhaps it was your good looks and masculine charm.
The security chief's amusement with the whole situation crumbled, and he could not hold the mask of indifference any longer. A snort and a snigger escaped him as he fought to keep his lips from expressing a smile and the laughter that were sure to follow. Out.
I apologize, Captain. I am certain that being the resourceful commander you are, you will extricate yourself from this situation without loss of limb or...
He added with a devious snort.
Virtue.
Get out and stay out.
Chris growled, smoldering as Ezra walked out of the room with that damnable smirk on his face.
Do you see it?
Rain asked as they sat inside the dimly illuminated confines of Four Corners. The low lighting afforded its patrons a panoramic view beyond the plexiglass windows of the establishment. Four Corners was usually busy at this time, but even Nathan had to confess to being surprised by the larger-than-usual crowd inside the place. As he and Rain shared a table, trying to enjoy a meal together, he found it difficult to dismiss the women's behavior in the room with them. Every darkened corner of the place seemed filled with couples who were, well, a little more than romantic. Females were lavishing all kinds of sensuous care on the males in their company, regardless of species. Nathan spied lusty kissing, erotically nibbled earlobes, and men enthralled by the lady in their presence with actions that bordered on scandalous. Yet despite feeling a little left out, Nathan noticed something very mechanical about the entire situation.
It's hard to miss.
He remarked, his eyes sweeping across the room once again before he turned to her once more.
It's not Valentine's Day, is it?
He laughed until her stern expression told him it was probably not the best time for humor.
I knew that there was something wrong, but it was not this bad before.
Exactly what was it like before?
He asked, no longer her dinner date but the chief medical officer. Rain considered the question.
I can't explain it, but it felt like the women were there but not quite there. If I have to be specific, they looked very detached, almost indifferent to everything going on around them. When Alex Stiles walks into the room, I can tell when she has had a bad day. Julia Pemberton always wears a smile. You can feel it when she's happy. Mary is harder to read, but her eyes tell you exactly what sort of mood she's in. When I look at people, I can tell what's going on with them. Being Trill, living so many lives and observing behavior, it becomes second nature to me.
Nathan understood, not about to discount the opinion of someone with the knowledge of a dozen lifetimes inside her head. However, he knew what she was talking about to a slight degree. Familiarity allowed you to get a feel for the people you worked with closely. It was even more pronounced on a starship.
Okay.
Nathan nodded contemplatively, trying to decide on the best course of action.
Let's just say you're right and something strange is going on. Why wouldn't it affect you?
I don't know, but it seems to be only the women.
For the moment, maybe it takes longer to affect men, although whatever it is, doesn't look dangerous.
He could not help saying that with a smile, but Rain did not find the remark all that amusing. Nathan registered the darkened expression on her face before gulping visibly.
Sorry.
I don't like it. The number of female officers on board the Maverick is about 350 compared to some 500 men, excluding civilians. If something is affecting those officers, then the Maverick's complement is halved. If we're under attack, we're going to notice those absences.
Suddenly, Nathan understood the enormity of her words. Whether this was an illness or an attack, she was right. The Maverick would be seriously underpowered. With 350 officers playing a vital part of the ship's operation out of commission, maintaining shipboard functions would become problematic. It was time to do something.
All right.
Nathan stood up and looked at her.
You finished.
He gestured to the barely eaten meal in front of her. Rain was not that hungry and had been picking at the dish's contents for most of the evening. Besides, she didn't want to be alone in case what happened to the other women happened to her.
I'm done.
She lifted herself off her chair and looked at him.
What do you have in mind?
Nathan quickly responded with the same concern about Rain being alone.
I want you to come with me. We're going to sick bay, and I'm going to get someone from in here to undergo a physical. If there is something wrong with everyone else on this ship, I want to know what it is.
Rain was not about to argue with him, now that Nathan believed this was more than just a figment of her suspicious mind. Judging by the cautious look in his eyes, it appeared she convinced him something was wrong, and his duty as a senior officer of the Maverick had taken hold. They left Four Corners as the debauchery taking place in the room climbed steadily towards apogee. Couples were becoming more involved with each other, and while it did not affect the men, they were responding to the stimulus offered by their partners. Nathan and Rain stepped out into the corridor, noticing things were no different in the hallways, either. Female crew members were affecting their male counterparts with seductive smiles and touches. It would have been almost funny if Nathan did not know something had taken over the women of the Maverick while the men did not see their manipulation.
This is getting scary,
Rain remarked as they moved through the corridor. Suddenly very self-conscious, she and Nathan were the only ones not affected. A shudder of concern ran through her at the thought of what the others would do if they suddenly noticed this little detail. As it was, the women's eyes strayed from the men they were attempting to seduce each time Nathan and Rain passed by. Nathan agreed, and suddenly the idea of this being an affliction became more and more distant. This situation was too rapid and coordinated to be a disease, and no viral agent he knew had communicability so specific to include every species but exclude gender. Nathan tapped his comm badge.
Doctor to the bridge.
There was no response. Nathan swore under his breath.
Doctor to the bridge. Come in.
Let me try.
Rain repeated the same action on her comm badge.
Transporter Chief Rain to bridge. Please respond.
Once again, the same silence greeted her.
Transporter Chief Rain to bridge. Please come in.
They can't hear you.
Ina stood behind them. Next to her was Lieutenant Charlotte Richmond and some other officers neither Nathan nor Rain knew by name. Despite no one making any threatening moves, the danger was obvious. Nathan took Rain's hand in his as a signal for her to be ready to run.
You girls don't look well,
Nathan stated, hoping the conversation would distract them as he tensed and prepared to move.
How about one of you joining me in sick bay?
We are fine, Doctor,
Inez answered with a sly smile.
However, you and your companion.
She turned her attention to Rain with narrowed eyes.
Seem unwell. Perhaps we may assist you.
That's all right. I have staff that can handle this.
I think we would like to try,
Charlotte added her voice, and Nathan saw her hands clenching into fists. It was not a solitary reaction on her part. He saw the same action repeated by the others and knew that he and Rain were out of time.
Run!
He bolted, dragging Rain along as the group rumbled into motion, falling into pursuit as they tore down the corridor at top speed. Someone leapt out at them when they reached a junction, with Rain shoving the woman aside hard, propelling her backward as Nathan braced himself to do the same to anyone in front of them. He slammed into a crewman and threw her into the wall, sparing enough time to see Inez and the others gaining, their eyes cold with rage. Nathan did not doubt he and Rain were in mortal danger.
Nathan!
Rain shouted as they neared the end of the corridor. The turbo lift waiting was the only way she could see to escape this insane mob of friends who would tear them to pieces. Accelerating to gain a few more seconds, Rain and Nathan were panting by the time they got to the control panel that activated the turbo lift doors. He slammed his palm against it and felt a surge of relief when the door slid open soundlessly. Thankfully, the turbo lift was empty when they tumbled inside it.
Computer, bridge.
The doors closed when the mob was less than a foot away from them. Rain scrambled to the opposite wall of the lift, exhaling loudly when those indignant and enraged faces disappeared between the closing doors. She could hear their fists pounding against steel further down the tube as the lift spirited them away from that deck. For a minute, neither spoke as they regarded what had just happened.
I think we are in a lot of trouble,
Rain announced in what was the understatement of the year. Nathan looked at her.
I think you're right.
Where are they?
The thinker inhabiting Julia's body asked after hearing about the escape of the two hostiles.
They're making their way to the bridge.
Inez's voice answered through Julia's comm badge as the chief engineer listened within the confines of her workroom.
I'll handle it. Continue as planned.
No further comment was needed because the many knew the plan, leaving her to deal with their most immediate problem, the Trill and the Doctor. Ever since the Alex entity told her the transporter chief was immune to the many, Reynal had been under surveillance. Now it appeared she involved the chief medical officer as well, and thus more extreme measures needed to be taken. Julia had already deactivated their comm badges, cutting them off from the bridge.
Chanu.
Julia spoke to her second in command as she stepped out into the main deck of engineering.
Turbo lift 3 on deck 34 is showing a system malfunction. Shut it down.
Chanu, who was at his station, immediately moved to comply until he saw the life sign readings within.
Lieutenant, it reads as being occupied.
It's unoccupied. Security is going mad trying to figure out if there is some kind of intruder alert, so shut it down until we can assign someone to look at it.
Her explanation satisfied Chanu since sensors were prone to giving off false readings in the event of a system's failure. Besides, he was not about to question the chief engineer of the Maverick.
Okay, I'm shutting it down. It won't be going anywhere for a while.
Good, that will do nicely for now.
Chapter 5. Ponfar. When Mary Travis turned up at Vin Tanner's quarters, the helmsman had to admit it did not surprise him, though he wondered why she was here. Mary had been a frequent visitor to his private sanctum ever since she began tutoring him on mastering Vulcan mental disciplines. Although not as telepathically capable as him, Mary improved his potential as far as possible without years of training. Most Vulcans began this kind of training out of diapers, and at his age, the best he could hope for was a rudimentary understanding of melds and metal shields. This suited Vin just fine because the Vulcan way was not his way, and, as Alex often told him, it was cause for celebration, not regret. Still, some things about being Vulcan could not be ignored. Mary had been pivotal in answering his questions, and it was comforting to know he had her to turn to for help. Having been married to a Vulcan, Mary possessed an insight into a culture that was alien to him.
Mary, what can I do for you?
Vin, who just stepped out of the shower, asked when he found her standing at the door. He barely had enough time to slip on a bathrobe and utter a few expletives before answering his door. Most of the Maverick's crew preferred sonic showers, but there was nothing more refreshing to Vin than old-fashioned soap and water. Toweling the wet strands of dark hair still plastered to his face, he invited her in politely. Mary waited until the door slid to a close behind her before she answered.
I just thought I'd drop in and see how you were doing.
Slightly confused why she considered this necessary when they last saw each other on the bridge a few hours ago, he supposed women's reasoning was hard to understand. He didn't know many until coming on board the Maverick and chalked up his confusion to a lack of experience.
I'm fine, thanks anyway.
He watched her saunter deeper into the room before taking a seat on the sofa, half covered with his clothes. A typical bachelor, Vin immediately made a beeline for it and hastily bundled up the garments, rolling them up into an untidy heap in his arms before tossing them inside his bedroom, hoping she didn't think he was a slob. Mary seemed bemused by his efforts and padded the space next to her. Something about her manner made him wary, but he complied, not seeing the minefield he was walking into with that one invitation.
Mary,
Vin spoke, feeling anxiety at the glimmer in her eyes and the sense he was on dangerous territory, though he didn't know why. Something about her felt different, but Vin was lost to explain how.
What's on your mind?
Vin wished she would just tell him and end his speculation. He had just put in a rather lengthy stretch on the bridge and was looking forward to dinner with Alex. While he liked Mary well enough and always had time for the lady, something about this whole encounter felt off.
You're a handsome man, Vin.
Mary touched his brow and flicked an errant strand of wet hair from his eyes.
I wonder if you know how much.
Oh hell.
Comprehension filled him then. Vin tried to move away but her other hand dropped on his thigh, fingertips brushing lightly against the skin. If Vin were human, this would be arousing, but Vin only felt ticklish. However, the physical sensation did not compare to his panic at recognizing the intimate overture made to him by the protocol officer, not just the protocol officer, but also the love of his best friend. The captain's girlfriend.
Mary, this isn't right.
Vin stuttered, renewing his effort to pull away when Mary placed her hand on his cheek.
Of course it is. You must know deep inside I'm the only one who can show you the delights you long to feel.
She drew closer until he could feel her breath on his skin. It caused a tingle to ripple through his spine. Vin could not say it was pleasant since he shared the sensation with blind terror.
Nobody can show me any delights,
he stammered, but Mary maintained her grip on him with her fingers pressing against his cheekbone and temple. Vin wrestled with how to extricate himself from this situation without offending Mary and getting keelhauled should his captain find out what was transpiring between them at this moment.
I'm not old enough.
Silly boy.
She offered him a smile that made him feel like a dumb, ignorant child.
Just because you can't feel carnal pleasure doesn't mean you can't experience it. For Vulcan, sensation does not end with touch. It transcends the physical and seduces the mind. Do you think Vulcans know each other's pleasure centers simply by exploring the flesh? There is a more sensuous experience to be had, Vin. You've just never been with another Vulcan to discover it.
Vin realized too late what she was doing when a warm pulse flooded his body. For an instant, the link established disorientated him, and Vin discovered he was not alone in his mind when the melt took hold. Mary barely rated as a telepath, but she knew how to enter his mind. All she needed to do was tap into the raw power of his abilities to extend her own before she flooded his mind with a warm deluge of images. Flashes of memory appeared in his mind like a kaleidoscope. At first, they were so rapid he could barely register them. However, it was not the images Vin found so overwhelming, but the sensations. Pleasure. Beautiful, seductive pleasure seared into his mind, the likes of which he had never known. Vin stopped resisting immediately as he felt himself drift through Mary's thoughts about her heated couplings with her husband, Sion. It was a mystery how she did this, but he could see Sion making love to Mary. More than that, he could also feel it. Breathless touches against the skin, lips tasting, tongues dueling in heat. Pressed against the sofa, her hands ran through his hair as she ravaged his mouth, leaving Vin oblivious to what was real and what was false. Vin wanted to fight her, but it was impossible. For so long, he ached to know what this was. Every time he looked at Alex, he wanted to know what it was to have Alex touch him as she would a lover. Vin fell headlong into the ecstasy of being coupled with another body until the beatific sensation made him throb so hard he groaned out loud. Mary straddled him, running her hands across his face and bare chest after she splayed open his robe. Her mouth plundered his. Yet none of it affected him as much as the metal stimulus sent to his brain by the melt. His hands caressed her back, and his fingers ran through her golden hair, relishing the feel of every strand in his fingertips.
Mary, how?
He asked when she paused a moment to let him catch his breath.
Does it matter, then?
She covered his lips with her mouth once more, probing deeply into his mind to bombard him with more heated sensations. As she continued this violation, something emerged through the miasma of implanted memories and Vin's own pleasure centers. Ponfar. The infiltrator who held control over Mary's mind immediately latched onto the word lurking in the depths of the inexperienced Vulcan, tearing it out of the place it presently remained hidden. As it continued its ascent from the depth of Vin Tanner, everything pleasurable about the melt fell away. Ponfar, raw. Fire. Heat. Power. It flowed in through him like molten lava. It made his heart pound in his chest and the blood boil in his veins. His brain cooked, and suddenly, this was no longer pleasurable. The pain slammed into him like a thousand knives digging into his flesh. Vin's eyelids flew open, and he shoved Mary off him, unaware he had swatted her away like a fly. Standing up abruptly, Vin was panting as premature Ponfar coursed through his veins. Rational thought vanished, replaced by blinding rage and an overpowering need he could not control. He wanted. He needed. Alex. This woman was not Alex. The Marionette realized she pushed him too far. His mind was not ready for the most turbulent chemical change of his species biology, and the meld had forced it to surface far earlier than its time. Assessing the knowledge inside her host's mind, she realized he was going into shock unless the link was broken, but not before he vented the full desire for flesh that Ponfar engendered. Mary grabbed the first thing within reach, a rather heavy bookend, and slammed it against the back of his skull. She was careful to apply enough force to incapacitate, not kill, which the object was heavy enough to do. Vin dropped to his hands and knees, hitting the floor without uttering a cry of pain and lapsing into unconsciousness. Her determination to save his life was purely self-serving. Had he lapsed into neural shock, the result could be death, and the ship's sensors would detect the termination of life and relay it to the bridge. It was too soon for such an alarm to be raised. Until the many took the nerve center of the Maverick, nothing could alert the captain to their presence. He and the first officer had the power to shut down the ship with a word and halt their journey home in its tracks. The many had waited too long to allow that to happen. She stood over the unconscious Vulcan for a second before dropping to her knees to check if he was still alive. His pulse confirmed it soon enough, no doubt he would wake in a few hours sporting an intense headache, but that was hours away, and by that point, the many would already have seized control of the ship. Smoothing down her dress and fixing her hair back into place, Mary Travis stepped over Vin and made her way to the door. She only hoped the others were moving against their assignments with as much success as she had neutralized her target. Buck Wilmington was getting exasperated. He had been on the bridge for some hours now, unable to contact the captain who declared himself unavailable. Chris disappeared hours ago after giving specific instructions not to be bothered while on the holodeck. When Buck questioned the reason for such an extreme order, the curt response convinced Buck to let the matter rest until Chris was ready to talk about whatever bothered him. Despite the captain's odd behavior, things were running smoothly. Engineering reported a malfunction in one of the transporter tubes which required the turbo lift to be taken offline to be repaired. Besides that minor hiccup, it was business as usual on the Maverick. The bridge was quiet. A few hours ago, Ezra ended his duty shift, not long after Chris retreated to the holodeck. Vin was relieved of the con by Ensign Jewel and was probably getting some slack time in his quarters. Alex's absence meant she was still studying the alien artifact. The science officer disappeared into such mental sabbaticals when a complex problem pitted itself against her formidable acumen. Buck knew she would turn up after learning everything one could learn about the object with an equally lengthy report. He and JD were the only senior staff members on the bridge.
"So how long until we get to Pacifica?"
"She's 9 hours away, Buck,"
JD responded with a sigh. "Oh." JD's boredom was apparent. The kid was itching for something to happen. Unfortunately, it did not look like their status would change before they reached Pacifica. So far, the only thing of interest they encountered was the artifact, and somehow, Buck didn't think that alone would satisfy JD's need for excitement. Buck supposed nothing could match the expectations of adventure and mystery JD envisioned in his mind. All young Ensigns eventually learned patience. Buck did, just like Chris and even Ezra. Now it was JD's time.
"Get used to it, Junior,"
Buck said with a hint of affection, remembering how young JD was despite his ability to handle himself.
"The problem with the exploration of space is there's nothing but just plain old space in between the big discoveries."
JD frowned and nodded begrudgingly.
"I guess so."
The younger man accepted he had to pay his dues. At least they would soon be at Pacifica, where he could feel sunshine on his skin and breathe air that wasn't recycled or ventilated. The hiss of the turbo lifts revealed Alex's arrival. The science officer scanned the bridge, no doubt wondering where everybody had gone while clutching a datapad in her hand. When she realized she had the bridge, she made her way down to the floor of the command chair and addressed him.
"Commander, I've finished my analysis of the artifact."
"Great."
At last, something to break the tedium. This day was crawling too much for his liking, and though Buck hated to show it to the other members of the bridge, he wanted something to break the boredom.
"I'm all ears, Commander. Lay it on me."
"Actually,"
she met his gaze with an expression he could not quite read.
"I think I should do this in private."
Buck tensed. Such a request implied trouble. He felt guilty for craving excitement when it usually became more trouble than it was worth.
"Something wrong?"
"No, not at all, but I do need to see you alone."
His brow furrowed in confusion at the request, but this was no nonsense Alex, who did not know what trivial meant even if it came and bit her on the butt. She didn't waste anyone's time with frivolous requests, and if she needed a private audience, she usually had an excellent reason.
"All right, let's take it to the captain's ready room. I'm sure he won't mind."
Alex nodded and strode across the floor, with Buck following close behind as they disappeared into the captain's ready room to have their little talk. Buck was curious about the reason for her enigmatic request and told himself to give up trying to figure out Alex because she was one woman he would never understand. The only person equipped to unravel that riddle was Vin Tanner.
"Okay, Alex,"
Buck said once the door had slid close behind them, giving the two senior officers the privacy they required.
"What's going on?"
Alex turned around, closed the distance between them, and in two short steps, pulled him to her by the collar, kissing him hard. As he felt her tongue slide past his teeth, exploring his mouth as she pushed him against the nearby wall, Buck was too stunned to react as he tried to process what the hell was going on.
"Alex."
Buck recovered enough to push her away so that he could find out if hell had frozen over, and no one told him. This was Alex, whom he considered one of his best friends, who since the day she arrived on the Maverick made it clear she considered him a womanizing pig, even though she valued his friendship.
"What's gotten into you?"
"Nothing yet."
She eyed him slyly.
"Give it another 5 minutes, and who knows?"
The gleam in her brown eyes left no doubt what she meant by that.
"Weren't you the one who said this morning that—"
he stammered, still too commingled with astonishment to offer any other comment than that muted response.
"I know what I said."
Alex started to kiss his neck lightly as she pinned him up against the wall, her body pressing against him as her hand slid down his body.
"Oh God."
He groaned slightly when she started stroking him gently through the fabric of his uniform. What she was doing with her hand was magical, and his pleasured cry only prompted her to plunder his lips with greater intensity.
"Alex, stop. This isn't right."
He moaned, fast reaching the point where he could no longer resist her.
"Vin is my friend."
She paused and looked at him pointedly. Her eyes burned with hunger, and there was something about her manner that was animalistic, menacing, inherently dangerous, and so goddamn sexy.
"Vin can't give me what I need. You can, Buck. I need you to ride me so hard that I'll never remember what happened to me with those Cardassians. Show me how love is made properly, Buck. Touch me the way you've always wanted to touch me, and I'll make you scream with pleasure by the time we're done."
Then she slid to her knees and robbed him of any ability to protest by the exquisite pleasure of her heavenly lips. Before he lost the ability to think at all, one errant thought flashed through his mind. What the hell would he tell JD about the report?
"Any luck?"
Nathan asked Rain after she prized open the panel of the turbo lift controls. It was almost 2 hours now since they became trapped after their short-lived attempt to escape from Four Corners.
"No."
Rain slammed the panel shut with a huff, clearly disappointed by her lack of success. Their comm badges did not work, and by the looks of it, someone had disengaged the turbo lift from the rest of the ship. There was not even enough power for the lights. Both of them sat on the lift floor, bathed in the reddish glow of emergency lighting.
"It's offline."
"They have engineering."
"They?"
Rain looked at him.
"Whoever has taken over the ship."
While Rain tried to reactivate the lift, Nathan spent the time unraveling the mystery of what was going on. As a scientist, he used logical deduction as his tools and, after replaying the events leading them here, deduced it coincided with the artifact's arrival. These bizarre circumstances began with the discovery of the artifact. Suddenly, a flash of insight came to him at that instant.
"You're a Trill."
"I'm glad to see those years at Doctor School didn't go to waste."
Rain grumbled, not really listening because she was searching for an alternate way of escaping since she was sure no one was coming to help them.
"Thanks."
Nathan deadpanned and continued.
"Let's assume it's not some strange alien disease, and something has taken over the ship. An alien entity, perhaps."
"Not perhaps, most likely. Where did it come from?"
"The artifact we beamed on board earlier today was some kind of storage device. We worked out that much before we got it on board."
"Okay, what it would have stored?"
"Not what, but who."
Rain turned sharply to him.
"You mean you think something was alive in the artifact, and it's taken over the crew?"
"Not alive as in having a body."
He quickly responded, not wanting to mislead her.
"Alive as in consciousness. If a symbiote can store the personality of every host it's lived in, why can't someone do it differently? Whatever that artifact is, we know it was for storing something. What if by bringing it in contact with a living organism, we gave it access to use our bodies?"
"But why just women?"
Even if what he claimed sounded plausible, that part made no sense.
And why not me?
Because you are not alone in your mind.
It was this point that allowed Nathan to deduce the rest.
You are several personalities in one host. An invading entity may not have been able to defeat all the minds you carry inside you. That's why you heard all your host voices scream. That's why when Alex...
His voice drifted off as things became more evident.
Alex is the carrier. The captain assigned her to examine that thing first. Chances are she would have been the first to come into contact with it.
When she touched me, she was trying to pass it, whatever it is, on.
Rain exclaimed, understanding now what had happened.
That's why she didn't follow me when I collapsed in the lift.
That's right. That's why they're after us now, because they knew it did not work when they tried to infect you.
Oh damn, Nathan.
She swallowed, appreciating the magnitude of the crisis the Maverick was facing.
We have to get out of here. We have to warn the bridge.
Well, I am open to suggestions.
He frowned, gesturing to their surroundings.
This isn't exactly my field of expertise. I'm a doctor, not Harry Houdini.
I have an idea.
She confessed after a brief pause. She intended it as a last resort, but Nathan's revelation told Rain they would have to take it.
How good a climber are you?
I can do trees.
Nathan saw her gaze lifting to the service hatch on the ceiling.
We're going to have to climb up the Jeffries tube and several decks to get to the bridge. Can you manage?
Rain.
He stood up and offered her his hand to help her up.
I'll manage. Besides, we don't have a choice.